Welcome to the Words Matter Pod with Akil Pinnock. I'm here with host of Music You're Missing podcast, Brendan Jannetty. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you, Akil?
I'm doing great, man.
I'm trying Celsius like for the first time today, the energy drink. Okay. It's actually like it's really hitting me hard right now.
What kind of energy drink is that?
Celsius raspberry acai green tea. Awesome. I figured I'd try that out because coffee really just kind of messes up my brain.
Yeah, and it sends you straight to the, you know, number two. So, you know, who is Brendan Jannetty?
Jeez. Oh, my goodness. We're starting off strong here. honestly, I'm literally just a normal person I think we met back in school. I don't know how much you remember about me, but I've always been a big music guy. But unfortunately, I never really liked to play music. Like, I tried, but I'm very like, I don't have a lot of patience for stuff like that. So I like did guitar lessons, piano lessons. And when I realized like music production wasn't for me, I knew that like working in music was something I wanted to do. So I would say like Brendan is just a guy who likes music and tries to work in it as much as he can.
Yeah. And do you come from a musical background that, you know, because you said you tried, but, you know, do you come from a musical background where somebody was pressuring you to play instrument?
Honestly, no. I think I tried guitar and piano just because I just always liked listening to music like a lot. I mean, full disclosure, I didn't have many like friends growing up because I moved. So I think like I just really got into music because, I mean, at the time I was growing up, there was like the iPod just came out.
Yeah.
Maybe not just came out, but like was popular and accessible. So I really like, that was what I did. I just scoured LimeWire for illegal songs and I would download them and then put them on my iPod and just jam out. And eventually, obviously, that evolved. And as I became like a more social being, like going to concerts and realizing the energy that I crave as a concert goer. And then as you kind of mature, being like, okay, I want to like, you know, make money doing this. I think I'm just someone who's always liked music. And now I'm just a guy working in the music industry. But no one other than that, he's a lazy sack of shit.
Wait, do you mind me asking how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 25.
Oh, 25, okay. Because you said, you know, LimeWire and the iPod first came out. I graduated a little older, so I thought it was like the two old people in school.
No, yeah. Well, I should mention, all my siblings are significantly older than me.
Okay.
So I definitely was probably, honestly, I was probably like the only 11-year-old who understood what LimeWire was. And I also was so inappropriately using the internet at a young age. I'm glad that I've since graduated. I know how to use the internet appropriately, but I was like 11 on like music chat rooms. I was probably talking to creepy old men. It was not the place for me to be. Probably downloaded a lot of viruses on the family computer too.
I'm glad you avoided To Catch a Predator.
You know what? I am too.
So I met you in spring 2019 semester at UMass in Dr. Shabazz's African-American music class. And I remember you were working in the music industry then as a marketing representative for Sony Music Entertainment, I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, you also work for iHeartRadio and promotions and event support, and you currently host Music You're Missing podcast. How did you develop this passion for marketing and promotion of music?
Yeah, honestly, it really happened like so crazily. I started in college at Fitchburg State, shout out. And I knew I wanted to do like video production just because like at the time I knew I liked music, but again, it's not something that you think is like a career. No one ever tells you that you can work in music. Like there's an industry rep at career fairs, it's never like a music person. Yeah. So I went to school for video production and I kind of realized that there is a career to be had within the music world. But I was a little scared to like major in music specifically. So I knew UMass Amherst had a really great business program. So I was like, all right, I'm going to transfer to UMass Amherst. I'm going to be an Eisen bro. and unfortunately I can swear, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You already did. So
yeah, that's true. So I have a huge potty mouth. It's really hard. Especially like I'm just gonna go on so many tangents, but like sometimes I speak at schools and it's really tough for me not to swear in front of children. But anyhow, I was at Fitchburg and I was like, yeah, I gotta get out of here. So I want to go to UMass Amherst. During that transfer process, my transcripts got absolutely fucked up and I just wasn't able to transfer because like they got sent too late, even though I had submitted it early. So I was like, damn, that sucks. Yeah. And they were like, just go to UMass Boston for a semester and like take your prereqs that you need. So then I go to UMass Boston and I get placed in the wrong classes. It was like, it was literally just like fail after fail. Wow. And then without, you know, going too far into detail, the next semester, like in order to get back at UMass, I had to do another semester of like certain classes. And I went to Westfield State. And I literally was placed in a dorm alone. My roommate was a psychopath. He literally ended up getting kicked off campus because he tried to light his clothes on fire. It was just a crazy, crazy like experience that I had. I had just had like a weird year and a half. I was confused. Like you're making that transition from high school to college. And honestly, like I literally just one day I was fucking crying in my dorm being like, I hate this. And I like just randomly applied to this job at iHeartRadio in Boston, which made no sense because I went to school in Westfield and they liked me and they ended up hiring me, which again also makes no sense because I lived 2 hours away from their Boston, office. Yeah. And that's really when I like experienced working in radio and actually working in music. And then from there, you know, like once I like got a hang of it, I would literally just travel from eventually Amherst to iHeart and actually work my ass off. But yeah, that's really kind of how it started. And like that's where the passion was, because when I started at iHeart, like I wasn't, granted, I was, you know, making minimum wage and like not a significant person, but I was working huge events. My very first event, I worked next to Demi Lovato and Rob Gronkowski, and a picture of me went like viral on Twitter and people were like making memes about me. That was my very first gig. So I was like, damn, like if I can do this as, you know, someone who literally just got hired, who lives 2 hours away, like what can I, how can I grow like immediately? Yeah. And ever since then, I've actually been so hardcore grinding. And I feel like right now is finally like the payoff 7 years later.
What exactly were you doing during that job?
Yeah, so it's called their street team. The cool thing about it is like usually street team, you just like go to events and whatnot and just rep the brand, you know, like popular bars and events. But because it was Boston, Boston's a huge market. So I got to do a lot of cool shit. Like there was like the New York City Jingle Ball for Z100 that they invited me on. So I got to work that. I got to work Jingle Ball for Boston. Like I got a lot of cool touring experiences and like direct with artist work. And like, again, when you're such like a kid in school, it just felt like so magical to like be fully in the industry so quickly. Yeah. So, I mean, the primary, you know, job that I did at iHeart was literally just a street team person. But I knew what I wanted to do. So I like, when I was there, I would sneak into the office and I actually created a podcast in college called Music You're Missing. I would sneak in, I would drive 2 hours, sneak in, record the podcast, and then drive back to school. So, and then that eventually evolved into what I do now full time.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wanted to be a part of a street team. I didn't even know street teams still existed, but, you know, just the grind of it and just being out there in a van and just putting flyers everywhere and stuff like that.
But honestly, after COVID, like I've seen too, just from my friends who are still working radio, they really barely exist anymore. Not a lot of live events are happening where people are want to like sponsor it. Not sure why I'm imagining just because the whole COVID situation, but especially during like, you know, when COVID was more prominent, that I know the street teams around me were completely shut down. Like there was no one there. So
yeah,
I think they're slowly coming back.
Yeah. So you say you moved around a lot. Is there one place that you could say that you're from?
Yeah. I didn't necessarily move around a lot. I just moved at a young age. Okay. Like honestly, like the formative time of my life, I moved when I was like 9 or something. And then weirdly enough, like I got these really cool homies as soon as I moved to my new town and both of them moved away. And I was like, fuck dude, I just made new friends. They all moved away. But anyhow, yeah, no, I'm definitely, I would say I'm from Walpole, Massachusetts, which is like obviously a suburb near Gillette Stadium. But yeah, I'm about to actually move back into the city in September.
You just moved back to Boston? Or?
Yeah, I'm about to move back into Boston. Right now I'm in Walpole, but I'm about to move to Boston September 1.
Okay. Well, congrats. I mean, that's where your podcast network is located, right?
Yeah. So Music You're Missing signed to a company called Big Night Entertainment. And they are such a fun company. They have, I forgive me, I don't know the actual numbers because I work in the podcast division, but they have like 30 venues across New England. And like they have the clubs in Boston. Like they have the Grand, Red Lantern, what else? So much. And Big Night Live, which is a sick music venue. But yeah, they started a podcast division like when COVID happened, obviously, because they couldn't really use any of their venues. And they signed us. And yeah, that's it. We've been crushing it at Big Night ever since.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back to, you know, going into Big Night. But, you know, what podcasts did you were you inspired by? You know, before you said you started Music You're Missing when you were in college.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it actually materialized into something bigger on a bigger platform. But
honestly, none. I would say really none. I feel like, granted, I was, you know, young when I really started it, and I hadn't really matured in the music industry to know it was fully out there. But I just remember being like a huge music fan and being like, yo, none of the artists I really like get a platform, and when they do, they're like pushed to radio and they're dumbed down to like fit a common narrative so that they sell. And I just was like, I want to make a space for these artists. And I never want to like copy anyone. I never want to be the next, you know, people. Granted, I'm nowhere near this scale. I mean, maybe one day, but definitely not now. But like people will joke like, oh, the next Ryan Seacrest. I'm like, no, I don't want to be the next Ryan Seacrest. Like, I think I just kind of want to be like the first Music You're Missing. But honestly, yeah, none. I actually also don't really listen to a lot of podcasts. Granted, I work full time in podcasting and I also have Music You're Missing. But yeah, I really don't listen to a lot of podcasts.
So how do you learn how to podcast?
I honestly just kind of do what I think is right and learn from trial and error. I think that's like the biggest experience I've had. I went to grad school at Berkeley for, you know, music business.
Yeah.
I've worked at like iHeart, Sony, Live Nation. Like I've had all of that, but the biggest lessons I've learned and the most I've accomplished is literally all done independently.
Yeah.
And yeah, honestly, just like thinking about Music You're Missing when like relaunched in 2020 versus now, like, no one formally taught me how to do anything. It was just learning as you go on. And I think that's when you're like forming a brand, I think that's really important too, because I don't really want to be influenced by other people. Like, this is my brand. This is my baby. I want it to kind of evolve naturally and see what happens.
Yeah. But do you think there is some value in being influenced?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think if you asked me like 5 years ago, I'd probably say no, because I was like a stubborn kid. But definitely, I think there's some value in listening and being mindful of what people in the industry or whoever have to say, but also knowing, you know, when to kind of do your own thing and kind of when to make your own decisions. But yeah, there's value in others, and yeah, I would never say that, you know, I know everything.
Yeah. So you worked in the music business. Well, you still work in the music business, technically. After having different internships where you're a part of, like, behind-the-scenes jobs, why step in front of the camera and behind the mic and become a podcaster?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I think when I was younger, I liked the idea of kind of being the center of attention, to be honest. And I really liked music, so being the one to kind of like drive the flow of the conversation while also like being on camera is kind of sick. Like, when I graduated, I became an on-air radio personality, and I was very much so on air and like on in front of cameras and whatnot. And that's actually when I learned I don't like that. I actually don't like being a host. I just like the conversation. Like, I like talking to these artists because I really like them. So to be honest, I think it started selfishly. I think I wanted like attention. I wanted like clout, and now I'm the complete opposite. I don't really like the being like a public worker, if that makes sense. Like, I don't like having to like post myself on TikTok or like posting pictures of myself.
Yeah.
Not a fan of it, but I guess that's why I kind of stepped into the light more so, because I wanted to discuss music with the artists I really like.
You think that comes from childhood, like not wanting to, you know, kind of stepping back into being an introvert and, you know, like, you know, not having friends, your friends moving away and then you move? Do you think that kind of goes back to that?
Yeah, I mean, and just like the shit that I grew up with, like I grew up watching American Idol, and then we think about like the shows Disney had, like they were all about celebrity, like Hannah Montana, mm-hmm. and who else? I saw something, and like iCarly. I'm just trying to think of what shows I watched younger. It was all about like kids growing up to be like famous. Mm-hmm. So I think I just like tricked myself into thinking that is what I wanted. And then, first of all, the idea of fame and just like being a successful person online has become so saturated.
Yeah.
I think that when you see that, you're like, damn, this is just not me. And I don't want that anymore. But yeah, it definitely became selfishly. And then I realized, you know, there's like more power to the platform. Might as well use it for semi-good, giving these artists a platform for promotion.
Yeah. But, you know, the good thing is that podcasting has such a niche audience that you can become famous, but at the same time you can walk down the street and no one would know who you are, but you're a big deal in the circle that, you know, in the people that you serve. So it is a good balance.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually think that's more rewarding, is like when the people who I want to care about the shit I do, when they actually care, that's way more rewarding than, like I said, someone being like, you're the next Ryan Seacrest. Like, yeah. No, I don't want that. I want, you know, if I do want respect, it's from people within like that circle. Mm-hmm.
So there are so many music podcasts out there, music podcasts where music is critiqued, discussed, and artists are interviewed. How do you separate your artist interview podcast from the rest?
See, that I love that question. I definitely, like, when I talk to these artists, I do a lot of prep, like a ton of prep, to be honest. And one of my favorite things is when artists are like, yo, how did you know that? Or like, I've never been asked that, or that's a great question.
Like Nardo or something.
Yeah. I honestly think I just do a ton of research, and I purposely want to stand out from the content that I've seen. And I don't care. And I also, there's people just need to realize, like, some people, and it doesn't matter, people don't care about half the shit that you ask these artists. Like, if there's someone who is, you know, I interview artists who have very established careers, to be honest. So mm-hmm. if I'm talking to someone who's been in the game for 12 years and has like a fucking Grammy, I'm not going to be like, so when did you get involved into music? Like, I don't care. Like, that they've done that part of their interview. They've done that part of press. You definitely need to mix it with like, all right, I actually want to like kind of dig a little, get you to tell me some shit that you probably wouldn't tell anyone else. But I also, you know, I got a job to do. You're promoting something. Let's talk about it. So I would just say, yeah, I differentiate myself by making sure that I'm not copying anyone else.
Yeah. So are all the artists that you interviewed artists that you listened to and were fans of already?
For the most part, I'll always be transparent. Definitely, like when we first started out, I would just invite people that kind of fit this niche sound that I was curating. And then as we grew and we have these connections, some people will send me an email, be like, hey, will you cover my artists? And I'm like, if I like them. I mean, there's no artist I've ever interviewed where I'm like, yeah, their music sucks. I definitely have to like their music, but now we're at a point where, you know, if someone large scoops on in my email, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Let's work with it. But I've also, like, there was a, I honestly forget his name, but I like checked him out and he's like a ton of followers. But I didn't like his music, so I was like, yeah, no, we're gonna have to pass. But yeah, everyone I interview, I end up becoming huge fans of. For the most part, I'm fans of them before. There are definitely some artists where I'm like, I've loved them for a long ass time, and I'm really happy that I got to chat with them. And then there are other artists who I was introduced through like an email and I eventually got on to really like.
Yeah. But, you know, you say you really only listen, or only interview artists whose music you like, but would you eventually, like, down the line, interview some artists that whose music you don't like? You know, because there might be something to learn. You know, if
I would honestly say it depends. I think this is actually a good question. The artist that I turned down, who was like kind of big, he was hip hop, and he was like really like super hip hop. And honestly, I just bring it back to our African American studies class. I don't think I really had the space to discuss hip hop with him.
The range.
But when you bring that question, I'm like, well, I guess I'm kind of missing on a learning opportunity for myself. So yeah, I think for sure. I think maybe I just needed like more of a team behind me to really kind of think about that, as opposed to running away from it because I was scared. Yeah, I definitely think there is value in that. I think that also comes with like imposter syndrome. Like, it's kind of crazy that these people are reaching out to me. So I feel like, oh no, like I don't want to risk it. But yeah, I think that was actually a really great point, and I should reconsider that going forward.
yeah, you know, just a you know, just a, you know, I don't know, just something to think about. But not like I'm not telling you how to do your podcast, of course, but I understand that you know, music you're missing is promotional, so I do understand you only covering artists whose music you like. Because why would you promote something that you don't like?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's also more like too. Like, I mean, we've had country artists reach out, and I'm like, I don't. One, our genre is so. I guess. Well, the first thing is our genre is like indie pop and alternative. So I don't necessarily want to branch out of that right now while we're still developing. But yeah, even like country artists, I'm like, I don't know exactly how I would communicate with you, because I really am, you know, trained and versed in pop, and specifically like that side of the industry and how it works. But yeah, I definitely think there's space. I think at that point I would really like right now, just for context, like I do all of the, I have a great team, don't get me wrong, but I do like the actual interview stuff and the booking and email answering and scouting all myself, while also like doing a shit ton of other things. Yeah, I think that would be like a really interesting whole season, to be honest. Just like music I'm missing. A music artist I've literally never heard of. Let me learn about them actually on the call. I think that'd be pretty sick.
That could be like a segment in the show or something like that.
Wow, look at this creative brainstorming. I love it.
No, let me go back to my job. So can you tell us the importance of having the Spotify playlist that corresponds with interviews? Because you could easily just interview these acts and just let the viewers and listeners just find the music on their own without having the playlist element.
Yeah, honestly, that playlist is the biggest thing that we have to offer for sure. I mean, anyone can serve as press, to be honest. I think people don't realize that, like, especially when I was first coming up, people are like, oh, how'd you get this artist? I'm like, I literally just reached out, like, and they're down to do any type of podcast. But as we kind of grow with the artists become bigger, you're not just offering them press, you're also offering them plays on their songs. And that's super influential. And not only that, like, the playlist itself became popular before, like, the podcast didn't. People were listening, like thousands of people were listening to the playlist, and people were not listening to the podcast. And now obviously I can add episodes to the playlist. So it's kind of like an even split, but yeah, that definitely is what put us on the map and added value to the brand for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I understand that too. Cause it, you know, even back to what you just said about just reaching out, you love the, you know, reaching out and writing emails and stuff, like, that's one of my favorite things about this too. And yeah, people ask you, you know, why or how did you get this person? It's like, yo, everybody got an email address, and everybody's information is out in the public, so
it's so accessible too. Yeah. Like, I my biggest thing is just going on their Facebook page, because people love to give their information out on Facebook. I've learned, not on many of the other platforms. You just click it. I'm like, okay, well, that's their manager's email. Let me just send them an email. But yeah, I mean, the high you get when you kind of risk it, you're like, this person's a little too big for me, but let me ask him if he wants to be on the podcast. And then like 3 months later, you get a random email and it's like, yeah, he'd be so down for that. Yeah. I'm like, oh shit.
Funny you said 3 months later, because it really be like that.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. have you, I'm assuming you've had like a guest where you're like, I'm gonna try to see if maybe they'll bite. And they did.
Yeah. So it's definitely fulfilling. I mean, when you send an email out, it's kind of scary. Well, it's not scary. Let me not say it's scary, but you feel fulfilled. Like, all right, so I already got rid of that fear, you know, that step. And now all I got to do is just wait and, you know, of course, follow up.
Yeah. I mean, no, it definitely is scary. Like that, it's embarrassing, to be honest. Like if I send an email to someone like huge, I'm like, I'm kind of embarrassed because, you know, just because they don't answer doesn't mean that they don't read it. So this person could read it, check me out and be like, this kid sucks. I'm not going to answer him. So it is kind of like scary, you know, because even you don't know their answer if they don't answer. So you put shit in your brain and then you're like, oh yeah, they hate Music You're Missing. When in reality, they're like, nah. Yeah, like, just didn't even open it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, back to Big Night Media, you signed with them as of April 2021. Why sign with a company like that instead of keeping the podcast independent?
Honestly, because I was recording it in my mom's basement and my parents talked so loud that it would get into the microphone sometimes. No, but to be honest, it's just kind of like the natural procession, I would say, if that's even a word, of podcasting. Like if you're doing something independent, you want to get a company involved. I knew the people at Big Night before I signed. I'm literally the one who reached out to them about it. So I just knew that there's value in it, especially where they have venues in the area. And to be honest, like one of the biggest things that I really was scared of joining the music industry was I didn't really want to move to LA and I really didn't want to move to New York. So to do shit in Boston that is actually significant to the industry is really sick. Knowing, you know, how their brand operates or how their company operates, I just feel like there's a lot of growth potential there. So it felt like the right move. It was hard. First of all, I had no money. I was making this by myself. Well, with my friend Devin, but I was like producing it, getting the artists. Like it was just a really like a beyond full-time job for actually zero money. It was actually more of an investment. So I knew that I needed like a team to kind of assist me because I saw value in the brand.
Yeah. And what is that like working with them?
Honestly, so great. It's so funny. I'm such a, if you haven't heard just from like the past 30 minutes of me talking, I'm like a huge hard ass type A person. And they've really have adapted their methods to best fit like Music You're Missing's practices, which is really helpful in a team producing something that you feel so passionate about. So they're sick. And then their actual company is just hilarious. Like they have scooters in their office. People are just scootering around. And it's just really great to be surrounded by so many people that like this, like they love concerts and they love, you know, that scene. So it's really sick to be a part of that company too. Cause then I get to go to a bunch of shows and whatnot. So it's been great. They've really helped elevate the podcast to the next level. And we are now they're bringing it to the next level again, because we're about to throw a music festival at one of their venues. So we're working on it. I actually have a call soon about that. So not today. Sorry. That sounded like I was rushing you off. It's tomorrow. It's been sick.
Yeah. What did they do for you that you couldn't have done for yourself?
So the biggest thing is like they produce the show, like they fully produce it, which is sick because I could do that myself. But again, I'm using low quality microphones. I didn't have like a multi-camera setup. They added that whole element. And then specifically our video guy, Josh, just like, he's sick. He just knows how to edit. I keep saying sick. He knows how to edit video with such like he just makes it so cool, to be honest. He's just a really great video editor, and he is able to do things that I would never even be able to like imagine, like in Final Cut. So they really, like I said, they helped elevate it, but yeah, they definitely produced the show fully. That's definitely something I would not be able to do.
Yeah. And, you know, I watched the episodes, and the setup, you know, was beautiful. The chairs, the monitor with your logo on it, and the microphones used the, you know, the official Shore microphone. And
the, yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely, you could tell there's a lot going into the production.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes it look more legit too. And I found that, you know, when we signed, we still didn't really like, or we didn't really grow like we, no, but we were able to grow just because the quality enhanced that much more. So when I'm sending people, you know, oh, this is an audio only podcast, you want your artist on, like I can produce them like a Canva graphic when I was doing it myself, versus now I'm like, yo, this is like a full 4K, four camera shoot. Your face will be on a TV behind me. Like there's just so much more value in it. And it's just a lot more professional looking. It's just more enticing for artists and their teams as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So the premise of Music You're Missing is to give artists who aren't publicized the platform. How often do you have people reach out after watching or listening to an episode and say, such and such episode introduced me to whoever's music?
Honestly, that's my favorite part. It's weird because that it just started happening. I feel like when we're growing, our fans weren't coming organically. They were coming from the artists, like we're sharing our stuff. So people already knew the artist. We weren't actually doing what we were saying we were doing, to be honest, because how can you, if you don't have a platform, how can you put new people on artists? But now we're at this point where like we have a platform and people are discovering music from us. So I would say one of my like favorite times someone said they really like an artist is this dude Jay Pappas. He's from Berkeley, like he's literally from Boston, and I don't do a lot of local talent, just again because like you want to, that here's a hot take actually, fine, if I may. Ooh, I don't like to time. Yeah, right. I don't like to work with a lot of local talent, because I find that if you do, then you're branded as like, oh, he's just interviews like local artists, or like that podcast is it's a local, you know, whatever. And the industry is not in Boston. The industry is in LA or New York.
Yeah.
But when I do interview local talent, it's because I really like dig them a lot. And there was this artist called Jay Pappas. They actually just graduated Berkeley, and he's so sick. Like I think he has like a few thousand monthly listeners. And so many people, specifically that song, he has a song called Train to Imperia, reached out and were like, oh my God, I love this artist. I can't believe that he, you know, only had a few thousand monthlies at that point. So how often was the actual question? Now, way more often than previously. But yeah, that is definitely a cool part, because that's like really what the whole purpose of the podcast was.
Yeah.
I find a lot of it too is from TikTok. Like a lot of our TikTok puts people onto new artists. There was one artist, Queen Herbie. She used to go as Carmen. She had a hit song, or it was her and her fiance had a hit song in like 2012 called Broken Hearted. Mm-hmm. If you heard it, you'd know it. And then she just rebranded, and she's like I don't even know what you describe her music, like pop rap. And I just made a TikTok about her, and so many people are like, whoa, I can't believe like that's Carmen now. Like that, now I listen to her. And I was like, oh, it's kind of cool. That was like the first time I realized that, you know, the mission for the podcast actually is like come true.
Yeah. Yeah. That means, you know, you're doing your job.
There we go.
Yeah. So, you know, as of today, Music You're Missing has released 68 episodes. You know, what allows you to be consistent? Because, well, Apple Podcasts, I guess, because it's kind of on YouTube, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. YouTube's a whole, that's a new strategy that I've been trying out. But yeah, I don't know how many fucking artists we have, but 68 sounds crazy to even think about. But
yeah, it's like over a year's worth of episodes. So, you know, what allows you to be consistent?
Honestly, it's just like, it's just part of my life now. Like, it's just who I am. It's part of my personality. I don't, when I do work for Music You're Missing, I don't feel like I'm working. I enjoy doing it. Like, I spend free time working on Music You're Missing. I also now like get invited to a ton of shows. So I'm like, this is my in to all these shows. I'm saving a lot of money. I don't have to buy concert tickets anymore. Yeah. But no, genuinely, like, this is what I wanted to do in music. And I mean, we're still not where I want to be. There's so much room for growth. But yeah, I'm literally just kind of like, if we go back to that class in UMass Amherst, at that time I was like, this is what I want, and now I have it. So I think that's really just what kind of motivates me, and growing. Like, with every episode, I feel like we grow so much, and whether that be, you know, technically or numerically, that's just such a motivation boost for sure.
I want to go back to your time at Berklee. You know, Berklee is like prestigious, internationally known school. A lot of great musicians came from Berklee. You went to Berklee for music business. What did you learn in Berklee that you apply to Music You're Missing?
Yeah, I mean, so I definitely misspoke. I'm still there. I have like two more classes. Okay. But when I first started Berklee, like, I took, they weren't like prereqs, but they were more kind of broad about the industry. Specifically, the touring aspect and just like the live entertainment aspect was super helpful, because I've worked in touring before, but I worked like VIP. I was taking care of the customers. I was taking care of the concert goers, and really getting like a more in-depth understanding of where this money comes from for touring, who's gets paid, how little artists get paid, how much artists get paid. I think that's super helpful too. Especially now, like, I was talking with Big Night about the show that we want to put on, and I'm like, no one's playing for free. No one's playing for publicity. Like, I if I have to pay them out of pocket, I will, because like, that's just, I know how little they make, or I know how scammy some of these like play for publicity things are. Yeah. So I think that's definitely the biggest thing I've learned. And then, you know, there are some other things at Berklee that I learned that I'm like, I don't even understand this, and I'll never really utilize this in my career. But that's just my weird relationship with education. I'm not a studious person, but I keep pursuing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do what you need to do so that you can progress in your world.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I know YouTube is a newer medium for the podcast now, but, you know, earlier on the YouTube page, you posted a lot of full episodes. And as of late, it seems like you're focusing on posting 3-minute clips. Is there any specific reason for that?
Yeah, 100%. Just whether it's search engine optimization or just user habits on YouTube, if I post a full episode, that's 40 minutes of content delivered to you once. Whereas if I post 4 3-minute clips that are really the meat of the podcast that people actually care about, they're one, going to find it more organically through search, and two, it's just more accessible. It's more consumable. And we get 4 pieces of content out of one. And honestly, doing that has helped tremendously, because now, one, we're organically reaching so many more people, but also some consumers like me, for example, I just told you, I don't even listen to podcasts, but I mean, I would listen to a 3-minute clip of my favorite artist. I probably genuinely wouldn't listen to a 50-minute episode with my favorite artist. Well, my favorite artist, sure. But with an artist I like, probably wouldn't listen to a full episode. So it just makes it more accessible. And the full episode is still available on streaming. To be honest, I don't release the full episode too, because I just hate the fact that someone can watch me for 40 minutes. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. No, but that's definitely a tactic that I see used in, you know, like DJ Vlad, his interviews like that. You post like, I mean, he does it a little different, because he'll post the entire interview, but that whole interview will come out to like a month later after he's posted 30 clips in chronological order of the same interview every single day up until he releases the full episode. So it's a little different. It's actually kind of annoying, but I'll still watch it. So
yeah, right. I think that's the thing is, like, it's okay, I guess, if it's difficult, if you're still watching it. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think from my strategy, I think it's just best for the people that actually care about it. And in turn, like, it really does, it is optimal for like social media. We or search rather, we did the same thing. And by we, me, I did the same thing for Spotify too. Where like we had Surf Mesa, who has a legit hit song, with ILY. And that's just something that people search. It has like over 3 billion streams. People are searching that on the regular. So to segment that on Spotify, I think I called it like Surf Mesa on his hit single ILY or whatever. People search ILY or they search Surf Mesa and we come up, which is clutch. And that has helped bring so many views as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Let me know if you start segmenting things. Let me know how it goes, because okay. I'm curious. I feel like a lot of the stuff I learn is so specific to music, but I don't know, maybe it's not.
Yeah. No, I think that's just the consumer habits. I hate to say that. It sounds so like capitalistic, but I think that's those are the habits of posting things and virality and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like at UMass, a big thing I learned was they would try to teach us in some of these comm classes, like the negative sides of advertising. And I thought that was like one of the most influential things I've learned, like just how, like when you have all this data and you can see consumer habits and not, granted, I don't do this at all, but like when you actually like huge companies that have so much data on these people, on their consumers, how you can tailor advertising and consumption to kind of fit what they're already doing is kind of wild. Unrelated, but I feel like I'd bring that tidbit up.
Nah, man, everything's related, man. Everything is a part of the story. Everything's a part of what you're doing now. How does it feel? So how did it feel to be invited to the Grammys?
That was crazy, honestly. The funniest part about the Grammys is amazing time. But I threw up for 7 hours afterwards. I had raging food poisoning. We were going to go to this after party. And I forget where it was, some club. And we just wrapped. I was eating dinner with my friend. And actually there was like a fight next to us at this really nice dinner. So we were like so distracted, and we ended up becoming friends with these two girls who were like not involved in the fight, but where it happened like in front of them. So we're chatting with them, we're planning on hanging out afterwards, and I just like looked at my friend and I was like, I gotta go. And I just I had raging food poisoning for like 7 hours, but I went to the Grammys and that's all that matters, and I got that pick. I know it was sick. To be honest, I got invited through someone I know. So actually, if you really want to get deep, I unpacked this with my therapist. I was like, it doesn't count that I got invited because I know the person who invited me. So like they were just being a good friend. When in reality that it was sick. Like it took me a while to like be proud of the fact I got invited to the Grammys. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. I'm happy I was there. And weirdly enough, I made a connection there for this other company that I work with, and we are working with someone high up at the Grammys. So I'm hoping I can go round two next year.
Yeah. So you didn't get invited through Big Night?
Oh no, honestly. So Big Night, amazing. They do all my production stuff, but all of the music side of music you're missing, the connections, the industry, whatever, this is all independent. It's all me. So shout out Big Night for the production, but yeah, no, they didn't like, they didn't leverage that at all. It was through someone I knew he doesn't work there anymore, obviously, but through like radio and iHeart.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. But so you still kind of have that autonomy creatively, even though you're signed to a company.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, I could never, and I would never. Like Big Night's great. If they decided to like pull some crap or whatever, I would just walk away and I would do the shit myself. And I think they know that. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're irreplaceable for sure, because they do, like I said, they've added so much value to the podcast. But I mean, I would always need autonomy, and I would never work with a company that wouldn't let me have it.
Yeah. what advice do you have for the new podcasters like me who have, you know, as of this recording, I've put out 18 episodes. So what advice do you have?
I would just say be consistent. And I think like my favorite piece of advice is something so simple. Is a one sheet has literally saved me. Do you have a one sheet?
No, I don't.
You got to get on it. So basically, whenever you reach out to someone, just attach a file, and it's basically a resume for your podcast or for you. Because like I said, bring you back to the conversation surrounding the playlist. I mean, anyone can have a podcast. What's the value in having someone on your show? Show them, like, you know, what are your numbers? What separates you from other people? I think I sent you my one sheet. Feel free to use that as a reference. But yeah, that really has helped, because people also, press people, publicity people, they don't really want to have to Google you, and they don't really want to have to go through your podcast and listen to three episodes and, oh yeah, he is good, or no, I don't like, whatever. That one sheet can provide them with a whole lot of information super quick. And I've seen it work too. Like this other company I worked with, I work in podcasting too, beyond music, but this other company I worked with, we would reach out, and without a one sheet, they did, and they were having a hard time. And I got them a one sheet with their past guests specifically, because I knew that was like what would be the hard sell for those publicists. And ever since then, I don't think we've gotten a no. So yeah, one sheet, and have past guests on there, because that's a lot of people, at least on the music side, will like compare their artists to other people and kind of track on like their rival, not rival, but like competitors, and compare.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you for that. And, I'm sure everybody out there, the newer podcasters, they will appreciate that information. So yeah, thank you for that.
And get on TikTok.
Yeah, I'm on there.
I feel like people are like, you need to post 3 times a day. It's like, you don't need to do anything. Just do whatever you want. And people, you'll find the right audience. If, I mean, so long as you're somewhat consumable. Not everyone is meant to be heard. That's, oh my God, delete that. That's not what I meant. Not everyone is like meant to,
I agree,
be on like a professional media. Not everyone's meant for that. I mean, some people are really boring and host podcasts. Like they're not meant for the big times. Let me tell you that much. And that's a tough reality. But yeah, everyone is meant to be heard. Oh my God. That's horrible.
What have you learned from podcasting?
Probably that I love being in control, and like creative control is everything. And also don't take yourself too seriously, literally at all. For like backstory, when I first came out of college, I was an on-air radio personality, and I thought I was the shit. I literally thought I was so cool for no reason. I literally had a 2 times a week. See, it's so insignificant in my brain that I forget my actual schedule. I think it was 2 times a week for like 4 hours, and I hated it. And it was country music, which I don't like. And I wore fake tan, and I just like thought I was the shit. And I just tried to copy someone at like our competitor station. And yeah, I needed to be humbled. And once you got humbled and realized that you're literally not, like, things aren't the end of the world, it actually has been so rewarding and fulfilling. Like, here's a story. Sure, why not? The other day I was covering this artist at a show, and this, we had photo pit like access, which is in front of the front row. And this woman comes over and starts freaking out at me. She's like, you're not supposed to be here. Like, you, whatever. Like, she starts yelling at me. And I was like, dude, I have a photo pit pass, but like, whatever. Like, if it turns out, like, I guess the tour itself requested no photo, whatever, and the venue gave me a photo pit pass. And I just like looked at her and I was like, hey, did you like the scene you caused? Do you think that was necessary? Like, was that, was that necessary? All I did was walk. I was like, I don't need to be here. I don't care. My seats are front row. Like, I can get the same footage from behind 2 feet behind me. Like, was it necessary? And then I came to find out that I knew her boss, and I was like, uh-oh, I know your boss, but I would never do that. But yeah, that was just like, things aren't the end of the world, especially in music. I feel like everyone makes it seem like the end of the world. I've had some crazy interactions with people's publicity teams where they're like, we need to cut this interview immediately. Not with Music You're Missing, luckily. And I think that's because I handle myself as like things aren't the end of the world. But yeah, in so many other aspects of the industry, I think it's so cutthroat like that. It doesn't need to be.
Yeah. So what's next for you in Music You're Missing podcast?
It's a great question. I think about that often. To be honest, I was planning to travel a lot come September. And I think we've now kind of like reached a point where people are actually listening to us and caring.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to hold off on that. And I'm moving to the city so that I can be like literally one T stop away from Big Night. And I can be a little bit more on. I think there is so much opportunity for me to really be more than I am. I just am a little unmotivated, specifically like in the TikTok world. And I think just being in that close to Big Night will help me want to be more on and more of a personality to bring more traffic to the podcast.
Yeah. I get it.
Because it's also weird. Sorry, I just cut you off.
No. So I get it.
Yeah. And it's just weird. Like, you know, artists will invite me to their show and then like I could go to a club and just get in for free. But then what do I do at the end of the night? I come home to my mom and dad's house. So it's like, what's next for that? I think once I make this move and I focus a bit more on Music You're Missing and it even becomes more of my life, I think, you know, cool things are to come, hopefully within the industry too, not just locally.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. You know, thank you, Brandon Jannetty, for, you know, host of Music You're Missing podcast, for allowing me to interview you and sharing a little bit about your story and all the things that you've learned and your current life as a podcaster. Last question, why do words matter to you?
Why do words matter? That's a great question. I would just say literally, like, because no two people are the same. Everyone is a product of whatever, their environment, their origin, their background. So really everyone has different words to say and different stories to share. And that's why it just perspective matters. So therefore words matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. Brandon Jannetty, once again, for allowing me to interview you. On Words Matter Pod with Akil Pinnock. And everybody, check out Music You're Missing Pod. And, you know, that definitely find some music that you will definitely, you know, that you've definitely been missing.
And won't be missing any longer. Yeah. But yeah, no, for real. Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, you're a natural host.
Oh, really? Wow. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I was chatting a lot. I feel like sometimes I'll do these and I'm like, I don't want to talk too much. But with you, I'm like, let's fucking hear all my words.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. You know, that might be like my first compliment at the end of
the interview. No way. No way. Yeah, no,
on camera. Maybe off camera, I got compliments. But
you can just like start the episode with the compliment if you want.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, man. Thank you. And, words matter.
So yeah, let's stay in touch.
All right.